This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors that have been passed on to you from generations past and from our dominant culture and start parenting with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience.
Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Sandra Etherington. We talk about family personalities and we dive really deep into extroversion and introversion, especially.
What's up, Family Culture Hackers? Welcome to the Family Culture Movement. I'm excited to introduce you. My guest today is Christine Owens. Christine is a mother of four children from ages from 6 to 16 and has homeschooled for 10 years in 5 states. That's very significant if you know different thought homeschool on. Okay. She has 14 years experience in various facets of public education. She has traveled to 20 countries and over half of the United States. Her family loves to travel and loves traveling to learn. She loves chocolate, old books, and hippos. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you.
Hippos. I bet you love that. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
Yes, I actually just got a stuffed thing that sings that song for Christmas this year.
Oh, that's
the one
awesome
Christmas thing I bought this year.
Oh, great. So, Christine, this is great. I love reading about this. So when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
When I knew at the age of 5 that I wanted to be a kindergarten teacher.
Nice.
That's what I wanted to be.
Wow.
And it stuck with me. That's why it cracks me up when kids are just like, I don't know what I want to be. I'm like somebody who gets like a mindset on something and I fixate on it. And that's what I want to be. So all the way until I had decided to homeschool, I was still in the mindset that I was going to be a kindergarten teacher someday.
Okay. So how did that shape who you've become and how over the years, what you have become?
Well, I always loved doing stuff with children. I worked in preschools and stuff. And then I went into being a classroom aide for kindergarten, half day kindergarten and developmental preschool program. I've done substitute teaching and stuff like that. And that was all, you know, geared toward me just getting experience. I've always, which I'll share later, like my family was not a big book reading family at all. And so children's book was my go-to, even as an adult. Like I did not like reading then. And so collecting children's books became like a thing. So before I even had children, I had gobs and gobs and gobs of children's books. Like that was kind of like my part, like one of my collections was children's books. So that definitely led me toward, an education mindset, but it was a different mindset though at the time, because it was more, you know, just collecting lots of things and preparing for the day that I was going to go in and open my classroom doors and have all these cute little children come running into the room to learn. So that definitely, I mean, that was part of me from a very young age, because I had an awesome kindergarten teacher. And then I had a horrid teacher for second and third grade.
Oh, man.
And then I had a fifth grade teacher that was amazing, that helped me come out of my, I guess I was a very sad child. So I wanted to be that teacher.
Yeah.
That, and when I worked in schools, I always found myself drawn to and really good at helping the kids that were having problems. Like I was just drawn to helping those kids and had ways of speaking to them. So that was, I mean, that was what I was going toward.
That's awesome. I love that you had that feeling of that goal from the beginning early in your life, because I mean, so many of us, like you said, I was probably one of those kids that's like, I don't know, what's the big deal? I think, you know, I was like, I want to be a veterinarian, but then later I'm like, I don't want to be a veterinarian. There's way too much schooling for this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know? And so it's great that you were able to like hold on to that and keep it going, persisting throughout your life. And that allowed you to stack experiences and skills. And, you know, I just admire people who have that ability. So I admire you for that. That's really cool. So what was the pivotal moment that made you come down this path or to decide to homeschool your kids and start this little rabbit trails idea?
Well, originally it was more time with my child because I lived in a community where they had a free preschool, a half day preschool. And my son was a social butterfly. Like he was a social kid. So he went and did, you know, half day kindergarten at a pretty young, you know, shortly after he even turned, I don't know, that would be four. Shortly after he turned four, he was in preschool because he had a July birthday. Mm-hmm. So he was one of the youngest kids in the class. But then by the time, you know, still on the public school mindset, I was, once that ended, I was like, oh, I was like, well, I guess kindergarten's the next step, you know? So I enrolled him in kindergarten. My high school, my husband was a high school band director at the time. And I taught his color guard. I taught his, the drill for the marching band. I came up with all the drill. Like I was his second hand, you know, his right hand man per se.
Yeah.
And so my son would go to school. I would pick him up from school. We'd drive straight to the high school. We would do band practice, you know, till 8:30 or so. Then we'd go home. I'd feed him a little bit of something and he'd go to bed. Yeah. And I started thinking to myself, I'm like, wait, I'm a stay-at-home mom because I wanted to be part of my children's lives. On, you know, that was a choice I made also very early because also I wanted to be a teacher, but I wanted to be a mom. Like that was one of my main things.
Yep.
I'm like, I'm seeing my kid like for an hour a day, really. Because when we were at the base on the football field, he'd just wander. I mean, right. Granted, he had the most brothers and sisters any child that he could possibly have.
That's awesome.
You know, so it wasn't like he was having like a poor experience.
Right.
But
right.
I wasn't having the one-on-one experience I wanted to have with him. So that was the main first reason why I started homeschooling. And then while homeschooling, even though, you know, again, I was on that track, I was very education minded for small children, you know, mm-hmm. that, and I knew what I needed to do. So that wasn't a scary part for me. But while doing that, a lot of realizations came with that, you know, okay, you don't have to have a degree to do, you know, and noticing that my kids were learning, because I started out with a boxed curriculum and was 6 weeks into it, it was a disaster. Yeah, like it wasn't working. And so I just like threw up my hands because I was like, well, I'm not sending you back to school. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, me yelling at you because you won't do two math problems isn't the situation I want either.
Right.
So we just took a break for that and started reading. And that was like all we did is we read books. And that's when I started realizing that, you know, children's curiosity and so many more things go into children's learning. And I didn't have to have books telling me what to teach them because it was all happening naturally.
Yes. Yes. That's awesome. I love that so much because that is... You know, so many parents who are starting to homeschool, or even I'll see on Facebook, like, what's a good curriculum for preschool and kindergarten?
I know.
I just want to be like, no curriculum is the best curriculum.
I know. I don't know. I feel bad sometimes. There's a lot of times, you know, they'll be like, my first grader isn't learning this on time or whatever. And my answer is always like, wait.
Yeah.
Because everyone's like, you know, obsessed with staying on a certain timeline. And not every child learns on that timeline. And I was one of those kids. So I sit there and sometimes I get like spill it all out. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you don't know what you're doing to your child.
Yeah.
I was like, you can make it a happy situation or you can make it detrimental. Even homeschooling, yes. You could do the same things.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So that's what we're going to be going into in this the rest of this discussion is, you know, why do we feel like we have to do that as parents? And so what is the dysfunctional belief or behavior in our society in general that you want to address in this conversation?
Okay. So there are four major points.
Only four. No, just kidding.
I know. Well, four major ones. Four obvious, or at least for me, obvious. Obvious. So the first one is that school is the only place your children can learn. So that's number one. Number two is that teachers are 100% in charge of teaching our children. You know, that's become, you know, it's become a thing where in the past you see like comics and memes and stuff about it, you know, that in the past, you know, if the teacher called and said, hey, something's wrong, you know, we need to like address these things. And the parents would be just like, you know, look at their kid, not saying we should blame our children for everything, but you know, they'd look at their kid and be like, okay, you know, we need to correct this. Where now it's the teacher calls and the parents are like, well, what are you doing wrong?
Yeah,
you know, you're the one messing up my kid, right? Which I, again, working in public schools, I experienced being on that side. You're just like, what are you talking about? So anyway, So that teachers are 100% in charge of teaching your children, that that you have to have a degree to be able to teach your children. I think that's a huge one, because parents will be just like, well, I don't have the education or the background to teach my children.
Yep.
You know, people were doing it hundreds of years ago without teachers. So
not even hundreds of years ago, right?
Yeah,
it's something
true.
That is like up until like
100 years ago.
Not even 100 years ago.
Exactly.
Right?
So yeah, it wasn't that long ago. And you know what? We've developed as a society still. You know?
Yep.
And then the last one is that children have to be forced to learn, that they have to be sat down in order to learn, which is probably the biggest, you know, I guess, epiphany I've had with raising my children and teaching them the way I do.
Okay.
But those are the four things.
So they were that kids need to be in schools,
yes.
right? That schools, that teachers are the only ones who have the capacity to teach our children,
yes.
basically.
And
because if we don't have a degree, then we're not qualified. And then,
exactly.
And so if we can't sit our kids down and force them to learn, then they're never going to learn anything. And so those to me really are like all one big, because it's all in this whole public school mentality that is teaching us that, number one, we're inadequate as parents. And number two, that actually our teachers are also inadequate, even though we entrust them with.
Exactly. And that they are 100% in charge.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're sending your kids to school, it doesn't mean the learning has to stop at what they're learning at school.
Yep.
So if sending your children to school is your only choice and you're unhappy with what the outcome is being, then that falls on you. You know, you need to look and be like, well, how can I change that? You know, if your children aren't learning certain things, how are you going to, you know, address that? Like, how are you going to fix it?
Yeah. Okay. So before we go into like solutions around this, because I 100% agree with you. Like it is frustrating to me when I'm just like, don't just sit there and do nothing. And think about your value and your worth as a parent, that our society is telling you don't qualify just because you don't have a degree. That's, I don't want to believe in a society that's telling me that, you know, so, cause I know
exactly.
what's best for my kids. And so that's that part of that is frustrating to me. And so, and like we were saying before we turned on the recording, that I was just like, yeah, this isn't exactly a homeschooling podcast, but I'm a homeschooler and I definitely believe that parents should at least consider the option of homeschooling, not completely write it off just because that's what society tells us. We should just always send our kids to public school or at the very least a private school, but that we should at least consider the option and to question the status quo around homeschooling and saying, you know what, maybe this is a good option. You know, maybe there is an opportunity here, and that some of these dysfunctional beliefs around homeschooling that we need to unlearn because they are telling us that we're not qualified or that we have to rely on a teacher or a degree, or we have to rely on forcing our kids to sit down and learn. And so those are things that I'm just like, I just want to shake parents and be like, no, you don't have to do any of that stuff.
Oh yeah. And that, you know, if they have, you know, that they can still do things in the home, no matter where their children are educated, that you can improve your children's education at any point in time, in any situation that you're in.
So why are we believing these dysfunctional beliefs that you listed? Why do we believe that teachers are 100% responsible? Why do we believe our kids need to go to school? And why do we believe we have to force them to learn?
I think it's all just growing up in the whole system.
Right.
It's the whole system
I feel like that scene in the How to Train Your Dragon when he's like, you just pointed at all of me.
He's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all wrong. Right. So like from a child, you know, you're taught that, you know, learning time is at school and that's when you learn, you know, so that's the very beginning of it. You know, children grow up thinking like, well, while I'm at school, I learn. And when I go home, I don't learn.
Yeah.
Learning doesn't have to happen at home. So that's like a major thing, you know, so they grow up and, you know, and of course, and over the years, you know, the kids come home and they have homework, lots of homework they have to do. Yeah. And I am sure I even say things to my children. Sometimes I'm like, ah, oh, Christine, you shouldn't say it that way. Ah, there I go. It's my phone. So
you got excited
too much. I got to put my hands in my pocket. So you know, the kids have homework and the parents are like, no, please just get it done. And then you can do whatever you want, you know?
Yep.
And you know, yep. that's yep. what we've been.
And it's kind of like a punishment to it's like, to well, be learning. You don't, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. You don't want to do this anymore. So let's just get it over with. And then you can do whatever you want. You know, you can play video games or, you know, watch movies or whatever. Right. So I think that's definitely a major part of it. Then, you know, as children grow up, our parents go to parent teacher conferences, you know, the parents are in the submissive, you know, like, you know, position going to the teacher saying, you know, like, oh my gosh, is my child doing okay? What's wrong with my child? You know, and you know, you're sitting there and it's the teacher trying, you know, the teacher who sees your kid, yes, a good amount of the day, but they don't know what's going on at home. They don't know what's going on the recess, but you know, yep. on the playground, you know,
and they're managing what, 30 other kids in
exactly.
the room.
Yeah. And it's a lot. It's hard. Like, you know, you've got the kids that are causing your problems. You've got the kids that, you know, are your like star kids, the children you learn first are the kids with the problems, you know, and those kids are in the middle, which, you know, yep. they just kind of are there. So yeah, the parent is going to a school, you go, goes to the school and talks to the teacher, and the teacher's the one, you know, saying like, you know, they got to fix this, this, and this, or they're behind in this. And all it does is put the parent in the position being just like, oh my gosh, my child isn't doing well. Or, you know, if you're lucky, you're the opposite would be like, oh, my child's doing awesome. But it's puts it where the parent then is put in this position of feeling they have to keep up with the Joneses, or they have to be hitting a certain bar at a certain age. And it makes, again, it puts the school as the authority figure, which of course, and there's some teachers out there that are wicked awesome and they really know their stuff, but there's also, you know, the situations where, you know, in the school setting, that child is just maybe not, you know, doing as well and you're stuck. So you get fed this information and it makes the parent feel as if what they might feel or know is invalid.
Right. Okay, you know. So there's so much there that I want to address really quick because that is my beef with the school system is not necessarily that, oh, your kid is doing poor, your kid is doing great. It's the whole fact that we're judging our kids' worth based on how our teachers are judging them or how they're graded or whether or not they're doing certain work or whether or not they're achieving certain levels on this
a certain date
arbitrary design of what age kids should learn certain things or what levels they should be on certain things. And so that to me is what I struggle with, because when I look back on my family culture journey and when my husband and I were like, hey, we did everything right and we're going to school, we're going to college, we're getting the grades. And according to the system, we should have a stellar job waiting for us and we're going to be able to climb the corporate ladder. And
exactly.
None of that stuff happened for us. And more those things are like not happening. They're not available. These jobs and climbing the ladders and pensions are not available for so many people, you know? So it's like, we need to be starting to think about educating our kids in a different way, because society, culture, economy is just different. And this system that was designed back in the 1950s, you know, 40s and 50s and 60s, is just, it's not serving us anymore. And so to just expect to send our kids off to school, and it's becoming even more arbitrary. And I could go off on other tangents about how our curriculum is created and how it's just a mess.
Exactly.
But you know, and so there's just so many things that go into it that I'm just like, if you're trying to fit your kid inside of a little box and say, okay, this is what you're supposed to do by a certain age, then as soon as they grow up and they realize, wait a second, nobody is in boxes anymore. What do I do now? You know? So that's the part about it that I am 100% on board with what you're saying, because I just feel like we're restricting our kids and their potential and our own potential as parents to be able to serve our kids and help them and love them and support them. And I mean, not that we can't love them, however we educate them. You know? Okay. Sorry. But you know what I mean? And so I love what you're saying, because that to me is like, I want to be able to help and support parents to help their kids to be resourceful
to be able to think of things in a different light and to say, maybe this isn't necessarily working the best way to educate my kids.
Yeah. And what you said about the boxes, you know, you're talking like in the bigger, you know, the bigger sense, but if you look even in the classroom setting, the children being put into the boxes, like there's the, like I said before, there's those kids who thrive. They do fine. You know, they love the worksheet work. They love, you know, they get things quickly and they're proud to hold up their paper first. Be like, I finished it, you know, but that is not the majority of the kids. The majority of the kid, you know, you've got your really good ones. And then you have your few, you know, that, you know, hey, I've been in a classroom, the few that your teacher wishes just would miss school one day out of the week or out of the year, you know, but the majority of them are, you know, they're in the middle, or maybe they're, you know, maybe they're good at math, but they're not good at English. And what happens in that group setting is those children, and it kills me even saying this, but I was one of these kids. So I'm speaking from personal experience, is they end up feeling they're stupid eventually. So I unfortunately was in the category of not well at math, not well at English. I wasn't good at anything. So I was in those wonderful pullout groups, which I called the stupid people classes. And I would go to these classes while I was leaving and watching the rest of the class about to do really fun things because they understood, you know, the lessons. Yeah. Granted, I was on that farther end where I wasn't getting a lot at all. But there are those, you know, the school system doesn't look at anything besides arithmetic and English. Pretty much those are the two main things.
Right.
If you're not doing well in those two areas, you're falling behind. And if you're falling behind and that's the only thing the teacher's focusing on with you, and you, for some reason, by that age, at that moment, are just not able to comprehend that concept, what else is left besides that you're a failure and that you're at home then with your parents drilling you with your addition, how to do addition or how to do long division?
And the more you do, you're like, the more I hate this.
Yes. And your self-esteem just goes down and down and down. And to the point, you know, where there's almost no return.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was in that system from probably third grade through my freshman year in high school and super remedial classes until at the end of my freshman year, I went to my remedial teachers and begged for them to put me in normal classes. Cause by that point it is the kids that are bad. Like the kids that don't want to be at school and pretty much police are making sure they're getting to school. And I'm like, I'm not these kids. I'm like, I don't belong in this class. And so it just, it's tragic to me.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's like, if you have children that are sick to go to school or upset about going to school or really say they don't like their teacher, you need to listen to your kid.
Yeah.
Because there's probably a real reason, you know, and that's where I get scared. You know, the parents go and they're just like, oh, well, your child acts up in class or your child just doesn't pay attention. You know, it might not be that at all.
Right. That's a symptom. That's a symptom of something that's going on where they feel like either they're feeling like they're being attacked, really. And
there's something
in certain ways, like that's just a symptom of something else that's going
on. So to me, it's like, if your kids are having like things like that happening, you need to address, you need to look at that and not be like, well, you just don't want to do schoolwork.
Right.
It might just be that they're not ready. Like I did all school. I did some college and was still barely hanging on. Went and lived with my husband in Germany for 3.5 years while I was in the military, came back. And I was an A and B student. I swear it was maturity. Like I didn't do well in school until I was an adult.
Okay. So that's the point. That's the point here. Because there, you said that all that they measure really in public school is math and language arts, right? But
which was not my strength.
Well, but there are like a million other skills that that are like part of what is part of the development of our personhood and like development of children. And so like that to me is what is the detrimental thing is that, again, their worth is measured by their grades, and then their worth, it's only those grades in like math and language arts where if you don't excel, then you're like, I'm an idiot. And so your whole life is just, I'm just an idiot. And so
Affected by that.
Yeah, exactly. And so what you're saying to me is like, well, it was just, I figured it out because I just grew up a little bit. Well, when we're just focusing on those academic skills and not helping to raise our children to like develop any of those other skills, then they're never going to, they're like, those things just never, to me, are never going to really matter.
Well, yeah. And it's not a whole person. Like my skills were, you know, I mentioned like, or so, you know, I had a fifth grade teacher that was awesome, or fourth grade teacher that was awesome. Our school had a play production come in and it was going to be a full blown musical. And so my teacher, she's like, okay, you know, because when I first got to her class, I wouldn't even look at her in the eyes, I guess. Like I would look at the ground, like I wouldn't even make eye contact. She got to the point, she's like, you know, earned my trust, I guess, and everything. And then she's like, okay, everybody's going to go try out for this musical. I got the lead in the musical, which was like a 2 hour long, like it was this crazy long musical thing. I was able to memorize all the lines, all the music, no problem. To this day, I don't know all my multiplication tables. It doesn't work. My brain doesn't want it in there. And like, I'm creative. Like in school, if there was projects, mm-hmm. I would get in, I'd be so excited. But how often do school, you know, classrooms really do big projects that you're supposed to be doing?
Right.
So I would always get A's on projects. I'd be excited because I'd put lots of time. I could put creativity and all that into it. Take away the project, give me a normal test. I was lucky if I was getting D's and C's.
Right.
So my skill set was not for those other things. I had one high school teacher recognize that I was good at creative writing. My grammar was horrible. My spelling was horrible, but she noticed the potential for my creative writing. Creative. Yeah. So she suggested I do AP English, but it didn't line up that year. So I tried it for the next year and applied for it. Went to the guy and I'm like, hey, you know, I never heard anything back. And he's like, I don't know how you have any idea that you have any spot in the world of AP English. He's like, you're horrible pretty much. I'm just like, like, oh, okay. And just like pretty much turn around and left. Cause I'm like, what do you say to that? You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
So it's what I liked. And like, my oldest is very like me. Like he still has, I mean, he's 16 and he's counting numbers to add up his multiplication tables. My 12-year-old is like, I'm having to push myself mathematically because he is going to surpass
picking
him.
It up.
Like,
wow.
He's going to go past him. For the other one, I'm like, okay, that's not your strength. I'm not here to make you feel dumb about it, you know, and I'm going to push him with his strengths. And I use other things and a real life applications to teach him the math, you know, and we're using, you know, Life of Fred, which is like a story way of learning math. So, you know, I'm doing that. But I'm able to make that difference where in a classroom setting, even if you noticed it, it's not an option. You can't do that with 30 children, individually teach them all.
Yeah.
And I'm teaching from experience.
Yeah. Like it's just that's where parents need to step in and help with that stuff. That's where parents need to step in. So I like what, you know, I feel like what we're talking about is we're covering this part of the dysfunctional behavior that you're addressing around that we don't have to send our kids to public school. We can teach them, and teachers aren't necessarily, they're not 100% in charge of how our kids get educated. They don't have to be, like, parents can take on that role. And this idea that we have to force our kids to sit down. Like we don't, there's so many different ways. Like, that's what I hear you saying is like, there's more than just math and language arts. There's more to the development of the child, and that sitting, forcing them to sit down and learn isn't always the best way to teach our kids. There are many, many ways. Like you mentioned project-based, you mentioned doing life experience to help educate our kids. Those are all important factors of education. And so go ahead and say what you're going to say. And then I'll ask more.
I was going to say, because before you pass, like ditch this really quick, I wanted to touch on that curiosity is the driving force of a child.
Yeah.
So for instance, you know, in a classroom, you're reading a book to children, you know, and Susie's like, me, I have a question. And then they're like, well, I have a dog like that. And then as a teacher, you're on a timetable. You're like, okay, thank you. And then you get five other hands go up about dogs or maybe a giraffe. Who knows? Right? But in your own home, and this is what I try to teach through, you know, my Little Rabbit Trails concept, is that from a book alone, you can teach everything. Even if it's a Dr. Seuss book, if your children, you know, you're talking about, Are You My Mother? Right? Are You My Mother? And you're reading that to your kids. And then the children are like, well, why can't the baby bird fly? There you go. There's your lesson. You can ditch everything else. Like if you read a book to a kid, you probably don't even have to have a curriculum because they're going to ask questions. And if they're curious and they're interested in it, they're going to learn about it. Like, yes, they're going to soak it up. So, you know, if you're like, oh, well, let's see why a baby bird can't fly compared to why a mother bird can fly. And right there, you're just talking about aerodynamics. You're talking about biology. You're talking about like so many different things, right?
Yep.
And you can touch on all those things within it, which also includes like mathematics and anything. Where if you're reading the book and they're just like, oh, why can't a baby bird fly? And you're like, oh, no, we're reading a book right now. We're not learning about that right now.
Yeah.
And then you just go on. You just missed an opportunity, you know? Or if you're just like, or hey, why, you know, how does a bird fly compared to the jet in the book? You know?
Yeah.
What's the difference between the two? You know, you can ignore question after question after question. And all you're doing is abandoning learning like all along the way. So that is like one of my major epiphanies with my children, is that you can pretty much school your children purely off their questions based on literature read, or based on you're driving down the road and they're like, why are telephones high? The telephone poles high. You know, what are those wires? How does electricity travel down them? Their curiosity alone could drive them for years, and you would never even have to touch a single book of curriculum, like made curriculum.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So that's going to fuel your education. And that answers the next question I was going to ask about, you know, this idea that, well, I'm not qualified, quote unquote, as a parent to teach my kids. But if you just listen to their questions, and then look, the internet is full of resources, or the library, or, you know, exactly. Like, you learn that you can learn this stuff along with your children. And that is going to be 100 times more effective than just standing over them and talking at them and not listening to their questions. And so I love that. That was what I wanted to say next. I was just like, okay, so, but I don't know if I'm qualified, but I like what you're saying, that it's like, it's just be cognizant of what are they curious about? If they're asking questions, okay, let's go discover that together. Be curious with your child.
Yeah. And I have learned
for their questions.
Yeah. I have learned so much more in my time homeschooling about like the world and cultures, and even I would say concepts in math, that I learned than I learned in like all the way through high school, maybe even some college. Like, I've learned way more because I have just joined along with them in the learning. And it actually drives me crazy when I have adult things to do, because I'd rather be sitting down next to them learning what they're learning. And I do the art projects with them most of the time, you know, and we do all the stuff together. And I do it with like my 16-year-old. He now has some things that he's doing on his own. I'm now trying to manage the idea of like, okay, I got 6 all the way to 16 with a middle schooler in between. It's like, it's a really broad range, but I still do group learning. And if I'm teaching something, if the 16-year-old has to be learning something, 5-6-year-olds along with us.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that over the years, like the vocabulary they've learned through literature and concepts they've learned, and that they soak it up. They might not totally understand it at that younger age, but for me, it's like, even if they get introduced to ideas, like my children actually enjoy Shakespeare. Like, I would have never known, like when I first started, you know, I should say first started homeschooling, I probably got like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years into it. And I was like, you know what? We should be doing Shakespeare. My husband's like, I hate Shakespeare. I'm like, so do I. It's horrible stuff. But I'm like, dang it, we homeschool, and homeschoolers do hate Shakespeare. So I'm doing it. But what I did is I like looked into it a little bit. I found a really good book that didn't dumb it down, but it might've took out a little bit of the more scandalous things, or at least it had child-friendly ways of saying the scandalous stuff. I started reading it because then there were short stories and there were more story form rather than reading a play. Because if you think about it, Shakespeare's plays, it's meant to be watched. It's not meant to be read. That's why we all don't like it.
Right.
So I did that. Then the kids, we would act out some of the stuff. I mean, they've acted out multiple Shakespeare plays, and it got to the point where I was able to take them to outdoor. I've taken them to 2 outdoor Shakespeare theater experiences, and all the way, my youngest at the time was 2, and they all just sat through it and they loved it.
Wow.
But that was just from time and exposure and finding a way to do it that's enjoyable, rather than being like, okay, everyone sit down, we're going to read a Shakespeare play.
Right.
And just reading it. And expect them. Because that's not play. That's not fun.
Yeah.
You know, and children learn through play and fun. And that's how they want to do it, because they're kids. Yeah. You know, and so when we sit them down, you know, the majority of children don't enjoy sitting down for 2 hours doing worksheets. The majority. I know there's those that love it.
There are some kids
who do. I'm so glad for the people whose children who love it. But those children still do also enjoy the fun, you know, the hands-on science experiments and know, all that kind of stuff. And that's how they learn. They don't learn from a chalkboard and a piece of paper, you know. That's not how they experience life.
Well, the definition of academic is not practical. Right. It's just book smart.
Yeah.
Like that's the definition of academic. It has to do with school and books, but has nothing to do with practical life experience.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well, let's, no, there's, if we are depending on that alone to educate our kids, then we're missing a huge chunk of experience that is could prepare them for a better and diverse life experience.
Yeah.
Schools
are learning from,
no, it's fine.
In school, they're learning through textbooks, right? So it's lots of, you know, a book full of snippets of information, little tiny bits of information. And also it's dependent on who's writing it, on what view you're going to get.
Exactly.
You know, I've seen some very interesting things, but for instance, like my 12-year-old is really into Egyptology and hieroglyphics and all that. And just before we moved cross country, someone's like, hey, I've got these high school level textbooks. Does anybody want them? And because it was from when she homeschooled her kids. I was like, you know what? It might be kind of cool just to see, you know, am I even hitting any marks here? Just out of curiosity, you know, what are they learning in high school? Because things have changed. I mean, I was in school years ago. So I get it. And so my 12-year-old was totally excited. He's like, oh, I want to read about Egypt, right? So he opens it up and it had like 1.5 pages on Egypt. He's like, what's this? He's like, you can't learn about Egypt in 1.5. Like he was mad. He's like, you got to throw these books away, mom. They're useless.
They're worthless.
Any information. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, if my 12-year-old says the high school textbooks are useless, then so I guess we'll just get rid of them. And it's true. I went through and I looked at all the things and it was like little tiny, you know, it's blurbs. It's just kind of like, you know, they're going for the general
kind of an overview.
Education, which technically, even in homeschooling, we are trying to give them a nice, broad, I can't think of the word right now.
Generalized. It's generalized.
Yes, generalized. Yeah. There's an education word for it, but I can't think of it. But what's great about when you are homeschooling
liberal
is you
arts.
Go as in deep as you want. You can spend 3 months learning about Egypt. And if your child's into it, they can continue for years learning about it. You know, it's not like, oh, we're not learning about that anymore. You can just drag it along. You know, it could be a constant learning experience.
It's something that if you know anything about like unit studies or things like that, is that you can go off your rabbit trails, right?
Yeah, exactly.
To go off on tangents and learn about, you learned about Egypt. So what is that? You know, how do we see elements of Egypt in our culture now? Or how did that impact the history of that time? Or what were their skills of language or mathematics in those days? You know, it's like you can go on so many little tangents within that topic that cover and touch on every aspect. You could go into archaeology and how they discovered the different civilizations and people and mummies and all these different things. And it's like, there's so many different things. And so if you think that, oh, they're only interested in this one topic, we should probably move on. It's like, no, don't stifle their curiosity. Don't stifle that desire. Especially if they want to learn and you're like, no, we're moving on. Like, wait a second. Your kid wants to learn
right until it dies. So I'm just like, keep going. Like I said, you can learn about, you know, the plants along the Nile. You can learn, you know, how on earth did they get the angle for, you know, the pyramids? How did they, you know, how do you think they got the pyramids together? Because obviously nobody knows for sure, you know, critical thinking skills and stuff. And then you find, you know, rich books that are awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, literature by, you know, either people who were from those time periods writing about that writing about those things, or finding great children's books that bring that stuff to life rather than a dry textbook.
Yes.
Because no child wants to listen to a textbook because it's boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh man. Christine, what I feel like this, the culmination of what we're talking about is really, you know, along the context of the family culture movement is to consider the options. I just feel like, you know, there's so many times in our society where we're just like, well, this is just how it's done, or this is what we're supposed to do to fit in at, or to say, oh, my kid is progressing at the level that they're supposed to progress. Or, you know, there's so many things that go into our children's education that it's just consider the options and the possibilities and get curious with your child. And don't just think that, oh, well, we should just stick with the status quo because that's what we're supposed to do. Take some time to think about it and question it. And that's a good thing. And to consider the different options and possibilities that are available for your child's education. And so that's basically what to me we're covering is like, schools aren't the only place where our kids get education. When you have them at home, there are so many ways to learn. There's so many ways. And it's like, I mean, we only touched on a couple, and it's like not even mentioning like field trips and museums and
oh my gosh,
all the things that are available, right? And mentors and apprenticeships, or, you know, there's so much available for our children's education that we need to really be adaptable to how our, you know, to lead in this society that is obviously changing already, but to be the leaders in a society where we can help prepare our kids for things that we don't know what we're preparing for, right? Like, yeah, that's the reality. Like, we just don't even know the direction that it's going to go ultimately. And so we need to be able to be flexible and resourceful and creative and not just go, well, this is the way it's done, because we're going to get
exactly
stuck. We're going to get lost.
Yeah. And no matter the situation that you're in, you can create what I like to call a learning culture within your home.
Yeah.
So whether, you know, and this goes for homeschoolers or public schoolers, you know, mm-hmm. When you're not doing your learning time, whether you're at homeschool or when your children are at home, like, what is it that you're teaching your children are worthy things to be doing? You know, what are they doing in their spare time? You know, what kind of literature do you have in your home for your children to read? What entertainment do you partake of at home? Because all those types of things, you know, if you want your children to read good books and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, I want my children to read classic literature, but they always pick these other books. It's like, well, then only have classic literature in your house. You know, if that's mm-hmm. the culture you want to create, you're in charge of your home. You know, the kids have what they have at school, or if you're homeschooling, you know, you are the environment. So like I used to, like I told you, I had tons of children's books, tons and tons and tons of them. And a couple of years back, maybe it's like 2 or 3 years ago now, I started thinking about, I was like, my husband hated a lot of the newer Bernstein Bears books, because all of them made the dad look stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like all of them. Uh-huh. And they're funny to read, but after a while, he's like, wait a second. It's like, this makes the dad look dumb in every book. I guess the original ones were much more value-based, but the ones that were put out by like the Dr. Seuss, you know, mm-hmm. easy reader books, they are the ones, you know, where the dad can't figure out how to teach how to ride a bike correctly, or he can't find the perfect picnic spot, you know? So, uh-huh. Then it started making me think. I was like, well, why do we own, you know, like I had a kid, my oldest was really into Thomas. We had quite a few Thomas books, but really in all the Thomas books, they're whining and complaining and sabotaging each other and all that. I'm like, why am I having these books in my house? So I actually went through the books and I got rid of things. I'm like, you know what? This doesn't teach the values or the culture that I want my children to grow up having,
yep.
You know, or if it was just totally pointless and you get to the end of the book and there leaves no room for discussion, even with, you know, picture books, you can discuss things with your little teeny children. But if you get to the end and you're just like, huh, that was a book. You know, why do I have it? Right.
Yeah.
You know, and making sure that you're like what your children are watching. Like we have never had cable, but we've always done it. We'd also, you know, we like to travel. So when we go to hotels, the children finally get to watch some of the mainstream cartoons, you know, so they have their few, they're like, yeah, we get to watch this. Right. But every time that happens, when we leave the hotel for like a day or a few weeks or something, that's what they play. They play, or they talk like they're SpongeBob, or that they're, I can't remember the other cartoons they like, but they play those things. Once we get back into our learning and everything, like when my kids were tiny, tiny, I read the very first book I chose to read aloud to them was Homer Pyle's Robin Hood, Old English. It was a tough read and I plowed through it. But guess what? My kids were pretending they're Robin Hood. They were talking using Old English. They were like doing all these things. If we're learning about Lewis and Clark, they want to pretend they're Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
So if you put those things in their path and that is the culture that you're creating, then that's what your children are going to live, breathe, eat, and sleep. You know, so if you don't like what you see in your kids, whether you're homeschooling or not, that a large part of it lands on you because you're in charge of creating the culture that's in your home and the environment that you have. Like, I don't let my kids watch Disney sitcom shows because all they do is teach is either that you need to be famous, rich, and that your parents are stupid. That's what they teach. Like, I was like, I like the old stuff. I'll let them watch Mickey Mouse Club of the Black and White, or they watch Little House on the Prairie. They do watch some newer things. I'm not a total loser for like a mean parent, but
you're making it's a valid point that those are the things that they become obsessed with. Those are the things that become they repeat that and they regurgitate that in your home and they treat each other that way. And we have lots of shows and things in our house that we're just like, no, we don't watch those things in our house. Like, I don't care. Like, there's no way, because yes, you're exactly right. They will pretend and they will repeat those things. And so if you want whatever you value and you want them to value, you're in charge of that environment. You are the leader in your home. And so, and you need to establish that as a leader in your home of the things that are acceptable and appropriate. And it's not just books or media or entertainment. It's all those things. And to be cognizant of whatever they're consuming and to support them to be, producers of the environment that you want to create. And so, that's a really powerful solution because you're spot on, Christine. Like, that's
100%. And they imitate, you know, the saying, do as I say, not as I do kind of thing. That's just it's a clue. It's just a totally absent-minded statement. Like, our children, as much as they grow up later, sometimes, a lot of the teenager, mentality is like, I don't want to be like my parents. But really, is that what we should be, if we're seeing that, then we got to be like, well, why are they acting like that? You know, if you want your kids to read books, you need to be reading books. If you want your children to work on their cursive or to write letters, then sit down and work on cursive and write letters with them. If you want them to, not be sitting on their phones all the time, hey, are you looking at your phone all the time? It sucks you when you have to look at yourself and see if you're the actual problem. Like, I always catch my kids saying phrases and I'm like, I don't say bad words. I don't cuss. Like, I have never sworn. But then I'll hear my say like, oh, well, that's a piece of crap or something. I'm like, oh, no. I was like, dang it. I'm like, that's for me. It's like,
they're paying attention.
Us. Yeah. And when they're little, they quite literally look up to us and they look up to their older siblings.
Yep.
And so if you or the older siblings are demonstrating behaviors or attitudes and stuff that you don't like seeing in them, then you need to look at your, thing. Kids that go to school, they can pick up things from school and bring that home. And that makes it definitely harder. But then you need to set that precedent and be like, you know what? That's not acceptable.
Not in our house.
Yeah. And make sure that within your home, that inappropriate things aren't also happening within your home that you don't want,
Well, and by establishing those policies and having the values, it's not just, this is just the way it is. And what I say goes, because then I think that breeds kind of rebellious behavior where they're well, at so-and-so's house, they can do this stuff. And I hate this here, And so, but when you teach them and help them understand why those are the values that you have in your home, and this is why we believe these things, then there's more buy-in and they're more like, oh, okay. I understand. And I think as we connect with our kids and we have that personable time with them where we can teach and get answer their questions, then they start to understand and appreciate why we have those values, why we have those rules and things. And then they don't necessarily feel like I have to rebel against these things because I don't understand. And I hate the way that mom and dad do things. And so it just, then it just becomes a power struggle. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. I know they do this stuff. Yeah. So it just becomes a power struggle and a frustration and you're not being consistent. So why should they be consistent?
Yeah.
So and it's a really big
Yeah, it's all the education. And that's the hard part, saying like, oh, my kids learn at school. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe you're saying they're learning their English and math, but what are they also learning at home? And so that's why I try to really push like your learning culture at home and like what that, what what are you creating and what are you encouraging, you know, within your own home?
Because tolerating more like, right?
Yeah, how often, you know, do you watch something and like roll your eyes out? You're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe my kids are watching that. It's like, well, no. If you're having that reaction, that probably means like, okay, you need to shut it off.
Yep.
You know, because that's all, you know, it's all part of the person they're going to become. You know, they're more than math and English. They're, you know, if you think about the end goal in mind, what person are you wanting to push out the door? Or not, you know, maybe not, you know, not shove out the door. Hopefully
the person that's going to grow up and be on their own and start making independent choices. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
What kind of person do you want to create? You know,
yes.
And that's the big picture, you know,
yes.
But in the public school system, the teachers don't have time for the big picture and they don't have them all the time. You know,
and if you take on that attitude that the teacher is all 100% responsible. And so at home, they aren't learning anything. Then you're going to become kind of casual about your relationship with your kids. And you start tolerating more of these behaviors that you're like, oh, I can't stand. Oh, where did they pick that up? Or, you know, they want those things. And so
back to school.
Yeah, exactly. And then you pick up this attitude. I could never have my kids home all day because they would drive me crazy. And so that's where that mentality comes from, because they're picking things up and they're behaving that way. You're tolerating it. And then you're done. You're just like, I'm done. I can't deal with this kid anymore.
I know. So I don't know what you've turned into.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, and that can still, it can still happen. It can still happen.
Yeah. Right. It's everybody
at home. You
dynamics.
Can still, you know, children are their own people and they have their own little minds, you know, but
if they're acting a certain way at school and then they come home and you just tolerate it or you become casual, then that is what they're becoming. And so it's like, basically you be proactive about what they're becoming. If you don't like what they're doing, be like, you know, I don't, that doesn't work.
Well,
and you know, start establishing like what is appropriate, what's inappropriate, start teaching some
and
manners
having,
and etiquette.
And things in place. Like my oldest, like he loves to listen to music. And so my oldest has type 1 diabetes. And so I was one of those, like, I'll never have a cell phone for any of my kids because of the whole swarm of junk that comes along with it. But with this type 1 diabetes, he has to have, if we have the phone with his thing that reads his blood sugar, we can be in our room or he can be on another side of the country and we get his blood sugar readings. So it's become like this necessary evil. But along with it, he always had his headphones in, and headphones make me crazy. Like, I can't stand watching people walking around with their big old headphones, you know, with people. And I'm just like, so I finally came up with a rule like a month ago, because I was tired of it. I was like, you can't have headphones till afternoon. Like, no headphones, because I was just turning into a power struggle all the time.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's just one of those little things. Like, for me, it was like, when he's doing that, he's ignoring his siblings, he's ignoring us, you know, and we just moved on to a homestead. So if he was working and I needed help all of a sudden, I'm shouting at him, he couldn't even hear me.
Yeah.
So I was like, the headphones have to go. Like, I had to come up. And it wasn't like, you aren't allowed to listen to music anymore on your phone. It's just coming up with a reasonable rule that made it, you know, so it still kept morning education time sacred and, you know, and him functional in the morning when we're all working together.
Yeah.
You know, it's just coming up with those little things that, you know, and things come up all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to, but it's just,
but you come up with, you plan out a reasonable, like you said, a reasonable rule, not just make things up as you go and throw things around.
And it has a purpose.
Oh, it doesn't really align with our values, but I'm not going to do this either. But having reasonable rules. Awesome. Christina, this is great. And I know we could talk about this for hours and hours ago. I love talking about this stuff because I am really supportive. I want to help and support families who look at homeschooling, want to look at it as an option, but it's overwhelming and they just feel like it's just too much. And so this is so important to realize, is that all the things we just said, you can do this. You can just be curious with your kids, learn along with them. And there are so many things besides just academics that are going to give your kids an amazing education. So Christine, where can we connect with you? First, what are you working on right now?
Okay. So right now I'm working on my second book of poetry. So part of my thing, something that's big in the world of homeschooling is like called poetry tea time. So it's the idea of getting your kids together with some snacks and reading poetry with them. And since my littlerabbittrails.com company thing is all about using literature to teach your children, I've come to realize that poetry is like a wicked awesome way. I'm now calling it my secret weapon, because especially if your children, if you're just pulling your kids out of school and they're not really wanting to sit down and listen to like Treasure Island or, you know, these long books that seem like so boring, then a great way to sneak in some classic literature is through poetry, because it's little snippets, like little bits of information. So like I have this one that I did last year called A Year of Poetry Tea Time. So it has like it has enough poetry to read one every single weekday if you wanted to. So if you're one of those like morning basket type people,
yeah,
and you could do that. And it's organized by month. So it will, you can just open to a page, no prep, and read. And it's going to fit something that month because it's organized by theme.
Okay.
And it even has like the bios for the, every single author has a mini bio. If there's hard words, I list them with their definitions right below the poetry. So, because a lot of times people get intimidated by poetry because they're like, I don't understand it, or they use weird words. And my whole thing is like to totally erase everything you learned in high school about poetry and don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, we listen to music on the radio all the time, and that's poetry. Mm-hmm. All of it is poetry. And you know what? We all come up with our own understanding or how we want that song to mean. You know, you can talk to five different people and one song can mean a different thing for every single one of them.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with poetry. Very, you know, and some are very obvious. Some are a little trickier, but in this book, I try to make it all like, if I read it and I didn't understand it right away, it's not in here. This is so that way you can introduce elementary all the way to high school age kids to poetry. Nice. And I'm coming up with a second one that's all patriotic themed.
Okay.
So that will be coming out hopefully this summer. So there's that. And then I did, if you're like brand new at homeschooling and like you're kind of curious about this idea of not using a curriculum and teaching your children through curiosity, I have a book that I wrote called Relaxed Homeschooling. Sorry, I'm not at a table. So this is like everything's far away. So I have this book too that I wrote. It's a very easy. I didn't want to be something you bought. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get through this. Like I've been told it's entertaining and it's an easy read.
Nice.
And it pretty much walks you step by step through trying to create your family culture, creating a family manifesto or like motto for your family. So you can create the environment, different things that I've done. And I'm not in any way in my book trying to say like what I do is like the hardline rule. I just try to give ideas of things that I've done and different things in the past. And then each chapter has a little task. So it kind of walks you through the process of trying to, you know, understanding your children, getting to know your children. Sometimes after you haven't had your kids around for a while, you know, you might not know your child very well. One, two, your kids might not know themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're just so used to walking into school and being told like, okay, this is what you're learning, whatever. Their curiosity might not be at their peak anymore. And sometimes it takes a few months of not even doing any schooling and just doing fun things, playing games, watching, you know, documentaries together for them to get sparked again and get excited about learning. So that book walks you through it to get you to that point, has like fun game suggestions, you know, board games to learn their educational, all sorts of stuff in that little tiny book. So those are my books. And then, Little Rabbit Trails with an S on the end, littlerabbittrails.com. And then I do have a Facebook page, Little Rabbit Trails group and page. I have them both, but they're both called Little Rabbit Trails. And then if you're more interested in the poetry idea, then there's also A Year of Poetry Tea Time on Facebook and Instagram. So yeah.
And you're busy.
What's so fun about the poetry though is it can be like, if your kids are off in school and you want them, you're just like, you know what? My kid thinks really shallow. They're not deep thinkers. And you're like, what's happening? Poetry is a great thing. You can even just be at the dinner table and you open it up. You're like, we're going to read one poem and we're going to discuss it. Like my husband right now, we have a book called Philosophy. My kids, they roll their eyes and they groan at first. But each night right now, we are discussing a different philosopher and their ideas and like, hey, do you agree with their ideas? Do you disagree with their ideas? Because one of our things that's important is that our kids can be critical thinkers, think on their own and not only be influenced by what other people tell them.
Yes.
You know, to be able to make their own, you know, and we don't tell them if they're right or wrong either, you know, especially philosophy. Philosophy is just
Right.
Up it drives me crazy. Yeah, exactly. It's up to interpretation. So yeah. Anyways.
Awesome.
So those are my different things that I do.
Yeah.
And that's I have also on my website, because my very first thing was learning through literature. So if you're like into unit studies or wanting to explore that, I have unit studies based on classic literature to make the learning from the books fun. So you kind of learn kind of what I teach in my relaxed homeschooling book. It's kind of like handed to you on a plate. So you can kind of learn and see how it works. And right now they're like way marked down because it has tons of links and some of them aren't quite, some of the links don't work anymore, maybe, but they're so cheap right now that people are buying them because they're like, whatever, it's cheap.
Yeah. And we need help. We need help. No.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Christine. That's awesome. I really thank you because I want to acknowledge what you're doing because so many parents right now are just kind of panicking with the pandemic when it hit and everybody's like, I have to educate my kids at home and this virtual school thing is terrible. And then they're like, what do we do now? And so I'm grateful for people like you who are creating resources and who are, you know, willing to help because kids and parents need people like you to guide us through this process. It's not an easy process, especially when you're unfamiliar with home education. So I acknowledge you and everything that you have built and are building. And I really appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you. And I forgot a free thing they can get really quick. I totally forgot. So this I've created, it's called Make Poetry Your Secret Weapon. And so this kind of mixed poetry with following rabbit trails. So it pretty much takes you and it just covers like it's going to be six different activities. So I have the poem on a page so you can put it up. And I found that if I put things up around the house, the kids, when they're bored, they'll read them and they learn them. And then there's like a little bit about the poets. You can cut out and make your own card. And then like this one has a little geography type thing and then some activities. So if you're wanting, say, you know, you want to add something, this will give you a resource. So that way you can get that. And that's at littlerabbittrails.com/free-stuff.
Nice. I'm going to put it in my toolbox as well so that anybody that comes into the toolbox, they can find it too. So that's awesome.
Awesome.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Christine. Thank you so much for this discussion and coming on the show to talk about it and help parents become more aware to think about these things, if they question the status quo, right?
Yes, exactly.
And to know that you have options, that there are many, many ways to be successful and to prepare ourselves for the future. So,
yes.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to publishing. Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss my next episode with Sherry Dunleavy, where we talk about grief and how our culture does not talk about grief enough, and it veers away from it. It's afraid of grief and what you can do about it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Please download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. Take a screenshot and tag me in a post about your experience with any questions you'd like me to answer on the show for a mention on the podcast. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Leadership Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember, Mother Teresa once said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.